Hello and welcome to the Feast of the Epiphany. This is Father Kyle Schnippel. I'm recording my homily on Sunday afternoon after delivering it over the weekend here at one of the two parishes where I pastor, St. John Newman. My voice is perhaps a little rough. I think it's a little better than it was actually over the Mass weekends. Struggling a little bit with a head cold, but I think I'm doing okay. Better living through chemistry, I guess, is the way to put it. Anyways, homily focused on the figure of King Herod, and it went something along these lines. A key figure in this passage that we have presented for us for the Epiphany is King Herod. And he's one of those figures, I think, where we know, we hear a lot about him, but we don't maybe know all the details. We don't really know who he is, what he all did in life. And he's often attributed with the title King Herod the Great. And it's always like, I wonder what you have to do to get that title of great. Well, in his case, he did a number of things. First off, king of Jerusalem, Judaism, Israel, up to the time of when Jesus was born. So shortly after these events, is when he passed away. And King Herod was, for sure, he was a builder king. Perhaps best known for his rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. The current temple prior to him was about 500 years old. The Temple of Solomon was built 900 BC, was destroyed by the Babylonians in 587 BC. The temple was rebuilt when they came back, 530 BC or so, when the Israelites came back to Jerusalem, started rebuilding Jerusalem, they slowly rebuilt the temple. And so after 500 years or so, you know, it kind of needed a new coat of paint, et cetera, et cetera. So King Herod was the one who did the rebuilding of the temple. And so when Jesus goes to the temple later in his public ministry, and they talk about, he goes in and he says, destroy this temple and I'll rebuild it in 3 days. And their response is, this temple's been under construction for 40 some years. Well, that was Herod that was in charge of sort of consecrating or instituting the rebuilding of the temple. And the western wall of the temple that still exists, sometimes called the Wailing Wall, the western wall, is the remains, the only remains of Herod's, King Herod's temple that's still standing. He did many other building projects. He built the city Caesarea Maritime, which modern day city of Tel Aviv is near there. That became the main port city to the Mediterranean from Jerusalem, from Israel, out to the rest of the world. He built a number of palaces and summer retreats, among other things. The Temple of Masada, if you ever look at that, that's where the Jews made their last stand around 70 AD against the Romans. They hold up in the Temple of Masada, which is down south along the Dead Sea. Josephus, we learn a lot about King Herod from Josephus, the Jewish historian. Josephus talks about that battle that happens at Masada as well. As a side note, Herod Antipas is the one who beheads John the Baptist. That's his son. Okay, so King Herod the Great, alive during Jesus' birth. Herod Antipas, alive during in his ministry, is during Jesus's public ministry. There are two more Herods who are mentioned in the Acts of the Apostles as well. Now, so great builder king, does many other things, but to earn the title great, but he had to do those things because he had to curry favor with the Jewish people, because Herod himself was not Jewish. His parents were both of Gentile origin. And so because of that, he's currying favor, but he sees threats to his rule as king everywhere, primarily because, not Jewish, he's not really a king. And he really only exists as a king because the Romans say, you can be the king. And if they pull that away, he's done with. And so he has this constant fear that his kingship, his kingdom, is going to be taken away from him. So as with many others who are in that same sort of predicament, quote unquote, he's very power hungry. He's corrupt. He's jealous of any potential threat to his throne. So much so that, well, there's no nice way to say this. He disposed of half of his 10 wives. Some would say having 10 wives is about 9 too many. Some would say that's 10 too many wives. But anyways, he disposes, he eliminates half of his 10 wives. He kills off several of his children. Anyone else whom he perceives as a threat to his power and authority, he eliminates and destroys them. And so with that background, then we see Jesus, we see Herod say to the wise men, go do him homage, bring word back to me so I too can do homage. We know that he's going to see this newborn king of the Jews as a threat to himself, not as someone to be welcomed. And so the next passage, the very next passage of Matthew's account of the gospel that follows the passage that we have for Epiphany is the slaughter of the innocents. The holy innocents in Bethlehem, where every male child 2 years of age and under is killed. And Jesus, Joseph takes Jesus and Mary into Egypt for their safety. In contrast to Herod, though, we have these magi who appear from the east, who appear probably from Persia, modern-day Iran. And, you know, popular lore at the time of Jesus' birth is that the coming of a great king would have been marked by some sort of celestial event, the coming of a star, the appearance of a star, a comet, whatever it was. These things don't just happen. They have reflections in the cosmos to show that something new is happening. And I love where Herod in his pride, if we look at him, contrasted with the Magi in their humility. They come seeking the newborn king of the Jews, not out of threat, not out of a way of trying to eliminate him, but as a way of bringing their gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, to him. Gifts fit for a great king, gifts fit for a great teacher, such as who Jesus would become. And that contrast between Herod's pride and the humility of the Magi is so stark in this passage. And even though it's still very early on in Matthew's account of the life of Jesus, it's only chapter 2, that contrast will continue to grow throughout the rest of the gospel, not just in Matthew's account of the gospel, but as we turn and look to Mark beginning next week, we'll see that contrast there as well. Do we accept him? Do we welcome him? Do we bring our gifts and lay them at his feet? Or is my own pride like Herod's, blocking me to what God is doing in my midst, in the midst of his people, in the midst of who he is coming to me? How do I know that difference? Quite simply, am I willing to lay my gifts at the feet of Jesus? Or am I so threatened by his mere presence that I want to snuff him out? Am I so threatened by his approach in my life that I want to eliminate that? Do I come to him in my pride? Do I come unto him in my weakness? As we see throughout Mark's account of the gospel, as we'll turn and look, beginning with Mark, that urgency that Jesus has in preaching, and we have that same urgency in responding. Let us respond as the Magi did, in striving to reach out, welcome Jesus, to go and meet him, to bring our gifts to him. And as our gifts are transformed every week in the Eucharist, may he transform me to become more and more like him, that I may be his agent in the world. God bless. I'm not preaching the next 2 weeks. It's Deacon Preach Weekends, so I'll try and get some other topics to throw up in this feed. And please be assured of my prayers for you. Happy New Year. Happy New Year. And as we transition back to ordinary time after the Feast of the Baptism of the Lord on the Monday of this week, my prayer is that you just let the Lord continue to grow more and more in your heart, in your life, in your family, in your home, not only this week, but throughout the year to come. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.